from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, United Nations investigators say North Korean leaders and possibly even Supreme Leader Kim Jong-un could be brought before the International Criminal Court for ordering mass murder, torture, starvation, slavery, and other crimes against humanity. We'll discuss it. Then at 9:30, some of the poorest and most vulnerable people in the Bay Area live in squalid apartment buildings mismanaged by one of the nation's worst housing authorities in Richmond. That's according to findings by the Center for Investigative Reporting. The Housing Authority may indeed come under federal control, and we'll discuss that issue. Forum is next. Join us for the hour after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. On Monday, a nearly 400-page report, the first of its kind, was released by the United Nations accusing North Korea of unspeakable atrocities and crimes against humanity. Human rights violations, according to the report, without any parallel in the contemporary world. Specifics include documentation of murders, torture, rape, starvation, slavery, abduction, and mass political and religious imprisonment, as well as travel bans and mass citizen surveillance. And the North Korean government, which had not allowed the panel to investigate within its borders, denied the existence of any of the violations cited in the report and called the report a political attempt to sabotage a socialist nation. I want to focus in this opening segment on the report and what it means. Joining us from the nation's capital is Victor Cha, who is professor of government and directs Asian Studies program at Georgetown University, previously served as director for Asian Affairs at the White House and the National Security Council. And Professor Cha, good to have you back on Forum. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you, Michael.
And we also want to welcome Phil Robertson, who's with us this morning from Boston, although he's based in Bangkok. He oversees the Human Rights Watch work on North Korea and is deputy director of the Asia Division of Human Rights Watch. Phil Robertson, welcome to Forum.
Thank you for having me on the program, Michael.
Well, glad to have you. And let me begin with you, and let's get an outline of this. The atrocities of these crimes is actually just mind-boggling. I think that's the only way to really describe it or do justice by it. And Michael Kirby, the Chief Justice formerly of the Australian Supreme Court, actually said it was reminiscent of and in many ways eerily similar to the Nazi horrors that were discovered after the Second World War was over, which is often an analogy that people, I think, maybe even too promiscuously use. But in this case, it's right on the target, isn't it?
Well, and regarding the political prison camps, the so-called Gwaliso, I think that it is correct. I mean, he referred to it as reminiscent of the totalitarian states of the 20th century. And so I think, you know, the focus on the Nazi concentration camps and also the Soviet Union's system of gulags is entirely appropriate when we talk about these kind of camps.
But we're not, with all the exterminations that are going on in these camps, and apparently people killed for political reasons and religious reasons, all kinds of reasons, is not being called genocide.
No, I think that they basically said that they are not going to go that far in the sense that this is something that I think needs to be determined further by the United Nations. I mean, when you look at the issue of genocide, genocide looks at systematic attacks against an ethnic or a national race. I mean, what you have here instead is segmenting the population into loyal classes, wavering classes, and enemy classes. And the enemy classes are the sort of people that were sent to these political prison camps. And this is a state policy. This is political persecution with a one-way ticket to what is essentially a death camp where people are systematically starved and worked to death.
And in this report, there was also a letter issued to Kim Jong-un. He was essentially put on warning that he could go before the International Criminal Court of Justice?
Well, that's correct. They did send a letter to him, and there was no reply. I think that most people would say that this is the sort of case that should be before the International Criminal Court. But in the same breath, they would also say it's going to be very difficult to get this case referred to the International Criminal Court by the UN Security Council because of the attitude, particularly of China, which could veto such a resolution to do exactly that.
Unfortunately, this suggests urgency, but this is going to have to go to Geneva for endorsement, then to the General Assembly in November, and then to the Security Council, and as you suggest, China almost predictably will veto it. We face the same problem with trying to get nuclear weaponry under control in North Korea. We've faced the same problem over and over again in Bosnia and Darfur, in the Sudan. I mean, you know, it gets to the point where you have to wonder, what kind of teeth does a report like this actually have?
Well, it has a great deal of teeth. There are no more excuses anymore that we don't know. I mean, this is an absolutely searing indictment, shocking human rights crimes that are systematic and pervasive, and have been authorized by the top levels of the North Korean government. It firmly establishes the North Korean government as one of the worst in terms of human rights abuses, and puts this issue of human rights abuses right front and center in the international community's dealing with North Korea. Previously, what has happened is it's been convenient to sort of push aside the human rights issue because we had other more important things to talk to North Korea about, whether it be the nuclearization, whether it be other threats to South Korea or Japan. You know, all these other things were always used as a reason that we can't really talk about human rights. It'll make them go crazy. It's too sensitive. This indictment is so comprehensive and so clear that now it is a task before the international community to prove what it's made of, to prove that actually if it has a longstanding commitment to human rights, if the UN system was set up to prevent these kind of massive abuses after World War II, here it is. Here's the test.
Again, and, Phil Robertson, you know, with us from Boston, is Deputy Director of the Asia Division with Human Rights Watch, and Victor Cha, Professor of Government and directs Asian Studies Program at Georgetown. He previously served as Director for Asian Affairs at the White House in the National Security Council. And Professor Cha, I mean, at this point, one wonders what kind of international response are we going to see and what kind of international response will have force behind it?
Well, one of the things that I would like to see is the members of the so-called six-party talks, the five countries, U.S., China, Japan, South Korea, and Russia, come out jointly applauding the report and vowing that as a part of their policy agenda with North Korea, they're not just going to focus on the nuclear issue, not that that's unimportant, but it can't be at the expense of the larger human rights issue. Philip said, this is something that's been there for a long time that's largely been ignored. And I think this report is important, although it may not change the human rights situation in North Korea tomorrow or next week or next year. I think it's important because it's a very important benchmark for how we're supposed to think about, how the international community is supposed to think about North Korea from now on, and how it's the responsibility of everybody to understand that this is a UN member state that is completely in violation of the UN Charter. And so I think it's very important that this report, I think Kirby did a great job on it, and I think it's going to be a very significant thing as we go forward into the future with North Korea.
Well, again, there's an urgency about this report. There is slave labor going on now. There are exterminations going on, and officially, North Korea says they have no political prisoners, but we've known for a while because of high-resolution satellite photos of labor camps that there are labor camps and they are full of political prisoners. And the fact is they're also abducting. I mean, this report showed that there are abductions of Japanese and South Korean citizens. It's almost widespread. This suggests real urgency.
Yeah, I think it does suggest real urgency. I mean, look, when this regime comes down, whenever it may come down, it will be revealed as probably the worst, one of the worst, if not the worst, human rights disaster in modern world history. The reason that we don't know much about it is because the North Koreans are very good at not allowing us to put names and faces to all of these cases, you know, whether it's in the prison camps or whether it's refugees that are sent back from China. They deliberately don't allow us to put names and faces to these people because then they just become a statistic. So, yes, there is a great deal of urgency to this. And one of the things I think would be very interesting to see is, you know, there are broadcasts that go into North Korea from places like VOA, Voice of America, and Radio Free Asia, and almost certainly they're going to report on the Commission of Inquiry's findings. And it'd be interesting to see how the people, once they hear about these sorts of things, how they react.
Again, we're talking to Victor Cha, who, by the way, is the author of The Impossible State, North Korea, Past and Future. And we still, Victor Cha, know so little about Kim Jong-un. I mean, he apparently killed off his uncle's family and is as despotic as his father, his grandfather, maybe even more, one could argue. And at this point, just how much of a loose cannon are we dealing with here? I mean, especially a loose cannon that has nuclear weapons.
Well, I think everyone's worried about it. Although the previous leaders of North Korea were a bit strange, in a sense, they were predictable. The concern about Kim Jong-un is that we don't have a lot of information about him. He took over power very suddenly. He's barely 30 years old. There hasn't been in his time in office a single real sign of economic reform or change in terms of how they run the country. The only thing that we've seen is the nuclear threats and, of course, this young fellow's interest in a lot of the sort of luxury accoutrements of life, like building a ski resort and hosting Dennis Rodman, the former NBA basketball player. So none of this gives anybody a sense of confidence that this young fellow was a reformer, even though he was educated outside of North Korea for part of his school years.
Yeah, Bashar al-Assad.
Yeah, right. and so I think there is quite a great deal of concern about whether the next thing that we'll see from North Korea is some sort of reaction to this report, whether it's in the form of rhetorical bluster or whether it's in the form of another provocation, a missile test or a nuclear test. The U.S. and the ROK are starting military exercises soon this season. They're routine exercises. They do them every year. But the North Koreans can certainly use that as a pretext for taking some sort of action.
Well, they've also said, at least the North Korean government has put out a missive that says that this is all, I hesitate to use the word, but I think it's the only appropriate word, a conspiracy by the United States and the European Union and a few other Western powers to essentially sabotage their socialist state.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the thing you would expect to hear from the North Koreans. But, I mean, again, I think this report is important because it not only lays out findings, it lays out recommendations at the end, and those may seem a bit sort of far-fetched or pie in the sky, but they're an important empirical referent because in the future, if countries in the six-party talks or anyone else gets into a negotiation with North Korea about anything, to have that there as a referent is a good and useful thing for negotiators to say, look, you don't only have to do something about your nuclear weapons, you have to acknowledge or at least try to implement some of the recommendations in the report. You know, these sorts of things I think are useful. If it was a document that the United States put out, it might not hold the same sort of international credibility to the six-party members like something that the UN put out. So, again, it may not change things in North Korea tomorrow, but I think it's a very important report.
Well, as Professor Cha says, there are a whole list of potential, maybe pie-in-the-sky reforms are pretty extensive and they're profound. But my real question to you, our listeners, is how much effect is this going to have? If China gets involved in a Security Council vote, it's almost predictable that China would vote against any sanctions against North Korea. We've seen that before with nuclear weapons. The international community has some benchmarks here, as Professor Cha said, but we've seen too many reports out of Syria and out of Bosnia. Maybe there could be an investigative ad hoc tribunal like there was in Bosnia or like there was in Rwanda, but let's hear from you on this. Indeed, I would like to hear from you on this. You can join us right now. Our toll-free number is available. And remember, this is a half-hour segment, so if you have something you'd like to say or if you have a question or comment, join us now. Toll-free number, 866-733-6786. We welcome your call, so feel free to join us now at 866-733-6786. A number of other ways to make your voice heard. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or you can post any questions or comments right onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, and you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Again, we're talking to Victor Cha, Professor of Government and Director of Asian Studies at Georgetown, previously Director for Asian Affairs at the White House and the National Security Council, and author of The Impossible State, North Korea, Past and Future. Phil Robertson is also with us, Deputy Director of the Asia Division of the Human Rights Watch, and he led Human Rights Watch's campaign in North Korea. He's with us from Boston, and indeed, we'd like to bring you into the discussion, so feel free to join us here, again, with any questions or comments you might have. The real question, I think, on most minds in reading this rather extraordinary document with a list of all these infamous and horrific atrocities is, what about accountability? What can be done and what ought to be done? Diplomacy seems to be not necessarily in the works. This was an impartial commission, and yet their results are being blamed on hostility by the United States and Western powers. And so you may indeed want to weigh in here. This is, again, something that has been described by Michael Kirby, who was in charge of the investigation, who was the retired U.S. Supreme Court, Chief Supreme Court Justice of Australia, described it as without any parallel in the contemporary world. Let me just read a couple of emails coming in here. Coincidentally, Madeline says, I'm now reading The Orphan Master's Son. I want to know, is how are the facts obtained when nobody is allowed in North Korea? And by the way, good plug for that book, which is a Pulitzer Prize-winning book by Stanford professor Adam Johnson. Phil Robertson, these facts were collected by extensive interviews in four different countries, I believe, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the answer to the question that you got in that email is that North Koreans have been increasingly able to flee the country, fleeing through China, coming down through Thailand, and finally making their way to South Korea and other places. In fact, that's one of the ways that we have been able to get information, is that we have been able to interview these so-called defectors as they leave the country and as they travel through that system and also in South Korea. And, you know, the information that they're bringing out, the stories of abuses, I mean, this is the real sort of crack in the wall that is allowing us to peer into North Korea. These people are coming out with information, but they're also able to communicate in some ways back through brokers and others on the China border into North Korea. And what we've seen, for instance, has been the use of these sort of computer thumb drives, taking in information, taking in videos, things as innocuous as a South Korean soap opera. But, you know, this completely cracks the ideological blinders that the North Korean government has tried to put on its people, that people see that there is an alternative reality. It's not what the North Korean government said. And this is one of the reasons that Kim Jong-un has, as one of his policies, worked so hard to try to prevent North Koreans from fleeing the country and has worked very closely with the Chinese government to try to catch them and force them back. And in our interviews with people who did escape, in some cases escaped after they were caught and they escaped again, and also with security officials who we spoke to who had defected to South Korea, they said that every one of these returnees sent back to China from China was tortured, every single case. So, you know, China has some serious culpability here, too. You know, I think actually if China let the North Koreans move freely through China, you'd see a massive exodus of people leaving North Korea.
Well, here's a question, in fact, about China. Victor Chow, let me go to you on this. Listener asks on our website, listener named Nancy, what's the point about hyperventilating about China blocking anything at the UN? How in the world would the North Korean leadership be brought to trial?
Well, I mean, the first, I think everyone would agree that one of the first and most important steps is to get China to come aboard. I mean, not just on the nuclear issue, but also on the human rights issue. As Phil just said, you know, the primary way that these folks escape now is through the border with China, where there are parts of the Yalu River where you can actually wade across. And the Chinese have, for quite some time, had a very systematic but quiet rounding up of these individuals, putting them on buses.
They send them right back to North Korea.
Yeah, but they put them on buses that have where the windows are all blacked out, so nobody can see them. Again, so that you can't put a name or a face to the problem, because then it's just a statistic for people, and there's just you don't get the same sort of international outcry and outrage. And so that's why I think the COI's report was very important, because it did its best to try to put a personal face on these sorts of problems and create some sort of international movement with regard to trying to rectify this issue.
Victor, I know you have to leave us, but I want to thank you for being with us. And again, Professor Cha is the author of The Impossible State, North Korea, Past and Future. And Phil Robertson will stay with us for some calls here. Let me go first to San Jose. Nalayini, good morning.
Good morning. I was listening a couple of weeks ago on something on the Syrian things, and the question is, when the Security Council doesn't really want to move and has its own personal issues and favorites, how do you ever move forward with the UN?
Well, that's the major question underlying this, Phil Robertson.
Well, I mean, I the UN Security Council, of course, is the preeminent sort of decision-making organ of the UN, but it's not the only organ. The UN General Assembly can also act on this. And in past, for instance, when you had the establishment of the tribunal to try the Khmer Rouge leaders in Cambodia, you had an agreement between the UN and the Cambodian government that was then validated by the UN General Assembly, and that was the decision of the UN to go forward with that process. So, you know, if the UN Security Council blocks things, you can take it to the UN General Assembly. There could be a collective group of states that would be prepared to set up some sort of ad hoc tribunal to look at accountability for crimes against humanity in North Korea. You know, what we find is with the UN, if there's a political will, there's usually a way, even if some member states want to block action.
Well, I want to bring another listener in with a question about the UN. Sage, hi, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, thank you. How can we as citizens figure out what to do when our own politicians don't think the UN has any significant voice? And we hear this often. And also in the marketplace, how can we, you know, affect change with human rights?
It's a good question. Actually, I think, you know, a lot of the UN skepticism has come from one political party in the United States. And I would be very interested to see how they're going to react to this report, because, of course, you are taking on one of the last Marxist-Leninist states in North Korea, although it, of course, has its own variations. But, you know, this is a country that the right wing in the United States has long said needs to be a priority for human rights efforts by the UN. Now the UN has acted. So
I think it's more appropriate to call it a gangster state, don't you?
I think it is. It has become a gangster state. It essentially has moved away from those so-called socialist ideals that the founding leader Kim Il-sung set out. But I think it has been all along really a totalitarian state.
Yeah, let me try to get another caller in here. John, go ahead, please.
Hi. I hate to just lay down what I consider to be incredibly obvious, but I think the key here is lean on China. You know, we buy a phenomenal amount of goods from them. They have a phenomenal amount of money invested in this country. Our economies are essentially joined at the hip. There's a lot of leverage to be played there. And, you know, without China, North Korea would not even exist. So that's, you know, not to oversimplify things, but that's the basis of what needs to be done.
Lean on China. The country we owe more money to than any country in the world. But go ahead, if you would, Phil.
Well, I think the issue on China is that, of course, now China is going to have to be defending the worst of the worst in terms of human rights abuses. This is going to be a heavy lift for China. China didn't support this Commission of Inquiry, but when the Commission of Inquiry was established, China didn't happen to be on the Human Rights Council, so they didn't have anything to say about it.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Again, it does point back to China, but North Korea, and you can read this report online, the atrocities simply boggle the mind. I want to thank Phil Robertson from Human Rights
Watch.
Thanks again to Victor Cha from Georgetown University, Professor of Government and Director of Asian Studies there, and we're going to change gears. We're going to talk closer to home, not quite atrocities like North Korea, but some horrible stories out of the Richmond Housing District when we return on Forum.